You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the June 2025 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's this month's editor's letter from Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief, with photograph by Norman Jean Roy. Scarlett Johansson has been a working actor for so much of her life that you can't imagine contemporary cinema without her. She's also a chameleonic virtuoso whose superpowers include her knack for unpredictability. When I read David Canfield's insightful cover story, I remembered both how long it's been since she first landed on my radar, Robert Redford's The Horse Whisperer, 1998, and how vital a voice she remains in Hollywood, not least because of her economic power as one of the highest-paid global stars of all time. She's done it all, from indies to major franchises. She's a firm believer in the cultural significance of both. To speaking out on behalf of artists seeking protection from AI overreach. Still, this year she's exploring two new frontiers. Scarlett makes her feature directorial debut with a film called Eleanor the Great, set all around her hometown of New York City and selected to premiere at Cannes. And she joins the Jurassic World, a pipe dream of at least a decade, she says. Prehistoric predators, futuristic intelligence. Whatever the threat, Scarlett can handle it. Summer blockbusters notwithstanding, this also happens to be our sixth annual TV issue in which we chart the currents of the almighty small screen. What better venue to mark the 20th anniversary of YouTube, the platform once famous for viral one-offs, Charlie Bit My Finger Anyone, which, for many, has now fully replaced the conventional television experience. Joy Press, our TV correspondent, spotlights the new class of creators at YouTube. She also profiles the man responsible for some of the greatest prestige TV series of our era, John Landgraf, chairman and sage of FX. His recent hits, including Shogun and The Bear, have reinvigorated the traditional TV landscape while breaking new boundaries in storytelling. These shows have dominated the awards circuit in recent years, and they deserve all the love they get. But my Landgraf fandom starts with The Americans, which premiered in 2013. The Cold War spy drama about a nuclear family, or was it a nuclear family drama about Cold War spies, was appointment television in my house, right through its emotional, enigmatic finale. In other TV news, David Canfield, also doing double duty in this issue, spends time with the legendary Kathy Bates, who's had a renaissance with the reboot of Matlock, and our executive digital director Mike Hogan moonlights as a nostalgia reporter diving deep into the history of the original cult TV drama Twin Peaks, which has had a robust afterlife since it first posed the question, who killed Laura Palmer? 35 years ago, David Lynch's show revolutionized television. Turns out, it was just one of many revolutions to come. Thank you. Now, here are some of the contributors to the June 2025 issue. David Canfield, A Study in Scarlet. You can learn a lot about a person by following them around their neighborhood, says Canfield, a Vanity Fair Hollywood correspondent who walked more than 30 blocks with Scarlett Johansson on New York's Upper East Side. I got to know someone who knows exactly where she is going. Chris Buzzelli, Shadows in the Valley. For Buzzelli, illustrating Joe Hagan's profile of California Congressman Ro Khanna on his Rust Belt road trip was personal. I grew up in that part of the country, and my late father worked his whole life as a machinist in the last of those steel mills, he says. Joy Press, Full Screen, Best in Shows. Vanity Fair's TV correspondent, Press covered much ground for the TV issue, reporting from the inner sanctum of YouTube luminaries in Burbank, as well as the Chicago set of The Bear. She also spent time with FX's iconoclastic boss and sometimes sage of the medium, John Landgraf, in L.A. Mike Hogan, Peak TV. What began as an epic act of procrastination, watching all 53 hours of the Twin Peaks recorded universe, became an actual assignment for Vanity Fair's executive digital director. I had this hunch that the fans were key to unlocking meaning, he says. Lachlan Bailey, A Study in Scarlet. Bailey, an Australian photographer who currently divides his time between Europe and the U.S., photographed cover star Scarlett Johansson on Long Island. He counts the great cinematographers among his influences. Geraldine Salio, A Study in Scarlet. Salio is a French stylist and fashion consultant based in Paris. While she credits her world travels for developing her taste, especially through the architecture, colors, and style of various countries, she will always delight in effortless Parisian chic. Molly Gordon Writes Her Own Ticket by Rebecca Ford, with photographs by Nick Riley Bentham of our subject wearing high fashion looks. I've never been in something that people watch, says Molly Gordon, which is a very different experience. She's talking about her breakout turn in the bittersweet Emmy favorite The Bear, and underselling her resume a little. She's been on Rami and Animal Kingdom, as well as indie movies like Booksmart. But it's true that playing the woman trying to get into the locked freezer of Carmy's heart has put a more intense spotlight on Gordon. Carmy is a character that people feel so protective over, and it's been kind of controversial to bring a romantic element into the show, she says. That's been at times annoying, fascinating, and interesting, just to be a part of something that people have opinions on. Gordon will have to get used to it. The Bear's fourth season and her Sundance road trip movie, Oh Hi, both premiere this summer. In Oh Hi, she plays a woman who goes to surprising lengths to convince her boyfriend to commit. Gordon worked with writer-director Sophie Brooks on the story for the dark comedy, which allows her to portray the sort of intense character she's always hunting around for. We don't really get to be crazy, she says. There's just still not that many great female characters out there, the kind of wild characters usually played by men. Before The Bear, Gordon was probably best known for co-writing, co-directing, and starring in Theater Camp, a critically acclaimed 2023 comedy that won a special jury award at Sundance. This summer, she will start shooting her solo directorial debut, Peaked, an A24 high school reunion comedy she also co-wrote. I feel lucky that I can create things, because what's so hard with acting is that you have to wait for someone to go, here, you can be creative today, she says. With writing, every day you can wake up and have agency over your own creativity in your own life. A Los Angeles native, Gordon learned about storytelling from her parents, director Brian Gordon and writer-director Jesse Nelson. My parents were always breaking story, in other words, plotting out movies and TV shows, or trying to turn shitty things that happened to them into a funny idea around the dinner table, she says. She's aware that industry outsiders think second-generation writers and actors have an advantage because of their access, and she doesn't disagree, though she thinks there's more nuance to it. It's access and all these things, but it's also just realizing how inconsistent and hard it is. Gordon enrolled at NYU, but only lasted a few weeks. She stayed in New York, working at Balthazar and taking acting classes. I was really brave when I was 18. I don't think I'll ever be as cool as I was then, because I had no friends and took classes with 50-year-olds. Finally, the roles started to come, as did the friends. Gordon's social circle now includes Ayo Edebiri and Rachel Sennett. I actually can't imagine that I would have a career without those girls, she says. I don't really have any doctor friends. I'm kind of friends with this circus. We're all insane. Gordon met The Bear creator Christopher Storer during her 3-episode stint on Rami, which Storer also directed and executive produced. They remained friends, and he offered her a role on his Emmy-winning series. She signed on, knowing only that she'd play a doctor. It wasn't until later that Gordon realized she was Carmy's love interest. I'm always the friend, she says. I've never played the romantic person. I was like, whoa, this is going to be a different experience. She says this season of The Bear will explore Carmy's struggle to add some life to his work-life balance, which is something that's been weighing on her mind as well. Last fall, Gordon found herself at the center of tabloid speculation when photos emerged of her and Jeremy Allen White cozying up and kissing off set. She sidesteps the topic gracefully, saying, with the internet, I just think, I even see it in myself as a fan of things. We're just a more judgmental society, she says. Gordon's role on The Bear is much more dramatic than she's accustomed to, and speaks to her hopes for the future. that she won't be stuck playing in her comedy ball pit. Yes, she loves projects with a little bit of cheekiness, but she's drawn to darker material, too. Even with her acting career taking off, Gordon's focus remains on writing and directing. She's also co-writing a new take on the 1987 comedy Outrageous Fortune for Searchlight. "I don't care about being the lead in something," she says. "I want to work with people that I admire, and that feels like more of the key to longevity for me in this career than trying to make it a name for myself as an actress." Dream Machine. Here's what's trending. In Murderbot, Apple TV Plus's new sci-fi series, based on Martha Wells's award-winning novels, a self-hacking security unit struggles to find a balance between its own free will and carrying out dangerous missions. In the photos, Tatiana Jones, David Dismalkin, Akshay Khanna, Naomi Dusmewin, Tamara Podemski, and Sabrina Wu in Murderbot. And System Reboot, Agnes Cuffs, Bireo Mini Wu, Mama Juju Eau de Parfum, Valentino Skirt, Undercover Vest. Similar styles also available, Apple AirPods, Max, Prada Bag Charm, Cartier Libre Ring, by appointment at select Cartier boutiques, Loewe Bag, Alaya Sunglasses, Kiko Kostanov shirt, similar styles also available, Atrasy sweater, Christopher Esber skirt, Eighth Day, the night cream treatment, Courage bra, price upon request, Beredo lip balm in Phantom Rapture, Brandon Maxwell jacket, similar styles also available, and Louis Vuitton sneakers. And this from Maggie Coughlin, spectacular, with photograph by Sarah Zanoni, Bulgari High Jewelry Serpentine Bracelet. Bulgari has once again transformed the serpent, the animal kingdom's emblem of metamorphosis that the Italian jeweler first incorporated into its designs back in 1948. Made from pink gold, sinuous and sparkling, the high jewelry serpentine bracelet immortalizes the continual rebirth of the snake as it sheds what no longer serves, with two vibrant buff top emeralds for eyes and pavé set diamonds for scales, coiled around a deep pink spinel and then again around the wearer's wrist. Renewal and reinvention. My Stuff, Red Hat, with illustrations by Jaya Nicely. Red Hatter James Keith, not to be confused with his hat label Keith James, prefers his suiting casual and his rigatoni spicy. Style file, daily uniform, Alu Conquer Reform crew neck and 5-inch revival short. Spring suiting, casual wear from Theory, Page, or Brunello Cucinelli. Hat, Keith James. Neckwear, gold Gucci link. Eyewear, Tom Ford Fausto Thick Acetate in black. Wrist candy, F.P. Jorn. Dress shoes, Prada Saffiano leather lace-ups. Sandals, Hermes Izmir. Socks, Nike Training Crew. Self-care, face wash, Cetaphil. Body care, Dove, cucumber scent. Cologne, Maison Francis Cochon Baccarat Rouge, 540. Workout, cardio, weight training, or boxing, 5 days a week. Supplements, black seed oil. Ritual, gym, drink tea and water, yoga, meditation. At home, statement piece, original sample of my first fedora. Recent edition, heart of a line artwork. Linens, Wamsuda. Kitchenware, caraway. Aroma, Diptyque Boulevard Saint-Germain room spray. Tech, Apple HomePod. For pleasure, reading Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert T. Kiyosaki, The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. Watching, I don't watch TV. Doing, traveling and dining. Listening to, Mixtape Pluto by Future and the Ed Milet Show podcast. Inspired by people and travel, unwinding with Keith Brothers Red Wine. The menu, morning cup, water, and black coffee. Indulgent drink, margarita from Houston's restaurant. Power snack, Greek yogurt and cashews. Comfort food, steak fillet or ribeye cooked medium. Revolving dinner reservation, carbone. I get the spicy rigatoni. And that was My Stuff with James Keith. Keziah Weir writes on books, Revenge Plot, nearly 20 years post-Oprah brouhaha, James Fry is back with a sexy, funny novel that's headed straight to the screen. With illustration by Oriana Fenwick of the author James Fry, Now and Then. If James Fry's road has been a rocky one, at least the bumps were diamonds. In the 2 decades since he got an Oprah dressing down, when it turned out he'd fabricated parts of his mega best-selling memoir, A Million Little Pieces, he founded and sold a bookie content farm, dabbled as CEO of an esports company, and collaborated with Lena Waithe on the Queen and Slim story. Also in those years, the rise of autofiction, the death of truth, and a newly unslakable thirst for IP skewering, while sort of celebrating the ultra-rich. Enter Next to Heaven, published by Authors Equity, Fry's first new book in 6 years, a Connecticut sex romp cum murder mystery with what he calls big nods to Jackie Collins, Danielle Steele, and Tom Wolfe. Accordingly, its characters would feel at home in the White Lotus extended universe. A cash-poor WASP art dealer, an agro-hedge funder, a Bitcoin-trading drug dealer who idolizes Eric Trump and Kanye West. That their physical descriptions read like a central casting call sheet, the women tall, thin, or thin, petite, with deep blue eyes, or bright hazel eyes, or big brown eyes like mud pies, doesn't really matter. And by the introduction of a tall, buff, black-haired, blue-eyed, steaming hunk of Connecticut beefcake, they ascend to something like camp. The book, to which Fry sold TV rights before the actual manuscript, takes place in fictional New Bethlehem, which bears a striking resemblance to his current home of New Canaan. It has caused something of a stir among members of his social set. At a party, he says one unwitting attendee whispered to his girlfriend, a countess and equine therapist, that they'd heard the novel was all real. He swears the characters aren't based on actual people, although of their art collections, I've been in enough houses of hedge fund billionaires to know what they tend to buy. For other details, he turned to ChatGPT, searching for the most expensive scotch in the world or most expensive silverware in the world. The irony of readers sifting for facts isn't lost on Fry. If I'm published as memoir or nonfiction, everybody goes through it and tries to figure out what's not true, he says. If I publish it as fiction, everybody goes through it and tries to figure out what is. I sit in the middle and say, I wrote a book. I hope you dig it. Six Pack, A Killer Deep Dive, 2 designer stories, and more nonfiction. Make it ours. From the Pulitzer Prize-winning critic Robin Given, an immersive biography of Virgil Abloh, the prince of pop design, whose work at Off-White and Louis Vuitton, where he was the brand's first black artistic director, shaped menswear and fashion writ large, published by Crown. Hollywood High, The Breakfast Club, American Graffiti, Twilight, Kids. Longtime Vanity Fair contributor Bruce Handy offers a wildly entertaining chronicle of the films that have portrayed and defined American teenagedom, published by Avid Reader. Murderland, in this noirish reportage on the serial killers produced by the Pacific Northwest, along with the implications of its environmental wreckage, Caroline Fraser gives David Lynch a run for his money, published by Penguin Press. Cooler Than Cool, C.M. Cushing's literary biography of Elmore Leonard, Writer's Writer and Dickens of Detroit, tells the crime author's personal history, but also includes excerpts from an unfinished and early-stage memoir, published by Mariner. The dry season, what began as a 3-month hiatus from dating, became, for serial relationship haver Melissa Febos, 12 months of intentional celibacy and a profound year-long foray into pleasure, friendship, creativity, and self-exploration, published by Knopf. Walk Like a Girl, The vaunted designer Prabal Gurung looks back on life so far, childhood in Kathmandu, working on the Bill Blass design team, starting his own brand, and finding fans in such women as Michelle Obama, Kamala Harris, and Kate Middleton. Published by Viking. Workplace dramas. As employees across the country find themselves back in the office, happily or otherwise, here's a guide to help figure out which TV work environment you're best suited for, by Chris Murphy. The show, Severance, Apple TV Plus. Office, office. Where are we? The enigmatic headquarters of Lumon Industries. Who's the boss? Harmony Coble, who will not grant your PTO request. Employee of the Month, Seth Milchick, climbing the corporate ladder and leading a marching band while doing it. Perks, great work-life balance. But watch out for aggressive fluorescent lighting, adorable but doomed goats. The show, Running Point, Netflix, Sporty Office. Where are we? The front office and practice facilities for the fictional Los Angeles Waves. Who's the boss? Isla Gordon, a hard-working Nepo baby who mostly employs her own siblings, both legitimate and not. Employee of the Month, Allie, who kicks ass at two jobs, chief of staff and boss's best friend. Perks, spending more time with the family, but watch out for spending more time with the family. The show, The Pit, Max, do-gooder office. Where are we? A very, very busy Pittsburgh emergency room. Who's the boss? Dr. Michael Robbie Robinovich, who can intubate us anytime. Employee of the Month, Dr. Mel, our empathetic neurodivergent queen. Perks, free drugs, assuming you don't mind risking your license. But watch out for spurting blood, violent patients, lingering trauma, and, oh my God, was that a rat? The show, Paradise, Hulu, Mysterious Office. Where are we? Explaining that would take a while. Who's the boss? Samantha Sinatra Redmond, the richest woman in the world. Billionaires have everyone's best interest at heart, right? Employee of the Month, not Secret Service agent Xavier Collins, unless you're a president who doesn't mind getting murdered. Perks, apocalypse reduced workforce equals great job security, but watch out for a distinct lack of natural light. The show, The White Lotus, HBO, far-flung office. Where are we? Another five-star, surprisingly dangerous hotel, this time with monkeys. Who's the boss? Sritala, a mogul with slight Norma Desmond vibes. Employee of the Month, Belinda, at least until she gets hers and cashes the F out. Perks, they'll let you sing at dinner if you ask nicely enough. But watch out for unwashed blenders containing deadly poison left on counters by thoughtless guest. The show, The Studio, Apple TV Plus, glamorous office. Where are we? Continental Studios, an entertainment institution going haywire. Who's the boss? Matt Remick, who never met a set he couldn't ruin. Employee of the Month, marketing head Maya Mason. Honestly, the Kool-Aid teaser trailer was cute. Perks, glitz, prestige, craft services. But watch out for Charlize Theron. You can't sit with Charlize Theron. Special treatment. With high-tech beauty offerings at the freshly renovated Hotel Plaza Athenee and a new location in Portofino, Dior Spas are redesigning wellness by Kaya D. Goosby. With illustration by Jaya Nicely, which shows three women in robes in a day spa. For more than a century, the Hotel Plaza Athenee in Paris, located at 25 Avenue Montaigne, has offered its guests a luxurious respite amid the bustling city streets and the chance to indulge in l'art de vivre, the art of living well. Just a few doors down at 30 Avenue Montaigne, fashion designer Christian Dior did the same when establishing his couture house in 1946. It was there that he would eventually create the iconic bar suit. His new look, a style he dreamed up for the women who dined at Le Relais Plaza, the hotel's Michelin-starred restaurant. Many of its star-studded clientele, Marlene Dietrich, Rita Hayworth, Ava Gardner, Lauren Bacall, Jackie Kennedy, Elizabeth Taylor, and Sophia Loren among them, morphed from muses to devotees, often making their way across the avenue to shop at Dior. In 2008, the hotel and the fashion house made the relationship official with the completion of the Dior Spa Plaza Athenee. Today, the synergy has been renewed with a fresh renovation of the tranquil space well known for its high-tech treatments, accented by sumptuous details, characteristic of the French fashion house. Here, warm lighting sets a gentle mood as a marble pool engraved with the brand's signature Rose de Vent invites guests to explore a range of sophisticated treatments, from light therapy to massage to facials to cryotherapy. Five single-occupancy treatment rooms are reflective of significant themes in Dior's life: constellation for his love of astrology, Mystior for the first fragrance made in honor of his sister Catherine, Montaigne for the Plaza Athénée and Dior Studios, Granville for the designer's birthplace, New Look for his 1947 collection launch, and one additional room is dedicated solely to light therapy. Inside the Dior Light Suite, created in partnership with the innovative French lighting company Lucibel Le Paris, an LED studded ceiling mimics the incandescence of the sun, delivering a doctor-approved dose of sunlight to help rebalance energy levels, encourage healthy sleep, and erase signs of fatigue. The sky diffuses a natural light with three levels of intensity: energizing, relaxing, and regenerating. For those plagued by jet lag or those struggling with daily stressors, three new 105-minute treatments inspired by the sun claim to aid in resetting circadian and chronobiological rhythms, each coupling light therapy with a complementary massage. Recover cloaks the body in amber-hued half-light during a stimulating massage. Rest offers a mix of sensorial stimulation through light that channels the sunset and massage. This weary traveler opted for the D-tissue massage to release tension and reoxygenate muscles, essentially reharmonizing one's internal clock for restoration and rejuvenation. Elsewhere this month, Dior is continuing its commitment to wellness with a new location at the Splendido, a Belmond hotel in Portofino. Set between the gardens and the ocean, Spa Splendido is the first permanent Dior spa in Italy with a focus on well-being. The signature service there, Splendidior, is a holistic treatment for both face and body, promising to offer full relaxation with guided energizing power, utilizing semi-precious stones. Ready for a new look and feel? Sign me up. Pronto. Full screen. At 20, YouTube has hosted billions of videos, launched stars, and made Hollywood nervous. By Joy Press. Drive 5 miles north of the Hollywood sign, and you'll find yourself in Burbank, where they actually make the dreams for the Dream Factory. Casablanca, Reservoir Dogs, and Euphoria were all shot here. Today, tucked inside an unmarked warehouse in a particularly drab patch of the city, Rhett MacLachlan and Link Neal are filming their own contribution to entertainment history, a segment called Will It Dip, for their delightfully goofy and imaginative YouTube series Good Mythical Morning. After taste testing a soupy dip made out of mashed Girl Scout cookies, the duo are presented with a bowl of black goo served under glass. MacLachlan removes the lid, and thick smoke fills the set, which is designed to look like a ramshackle fishing lodge. When the cameras stop rolling, Neal tells the show's culinary producer, "I do feel like you were trying to kill us a little bit." MacLachlan and Neal are friends from small-town North Carolina who met in first-grade detention. They experimented with making films as teens, and at 21, MacLachlan auditioned for The Real World. Unsuccessfully. In 2006, the guys were shooting comic skits and songs after work in a basement when they realized that YouTube, still very much in its infancy, could be a great outlet for their stuff. These days, they operate out of this 17,000-square-foot maze, which comes complete with writers' rooms, test kitchens, and a prop department full of bizarro pieces from episodes past and future. The Mythical Company now makes multiple series and podcast, as well as having a food website, merchandising, and an investment fund for the next generation of digital creators. Their YouTube channels have a combined audience of 30 million subscribers, and Good Mythical Morning alone has twice as many viewers aged 18 to 34 as Seth, Stephen, Jimmy, and Jimmy combined. What more could McLaughlin and Neil want? Hollywood awards and a little of the prestige that comes with them, for starters. Obviously, it's cool in L.A. when you've got a shelf with an Emmy on it, says McLaughlin, grinning through his thicket of facial hair. The awards are designed to recognize what is resonating culturally. Well, we are resonating culturally, so we should be a part of that conversation. Shows that get the awards, there's this sense that these are the real shows. We want to be on the same stage because we are competing with them directly. You want to be treated like a real boy, I say. Exactly, McLaughlin says, laughing. It's an expansion of what entertainment is, Neil adds. We're not trying to kill anything. We're just trying to be invited to the party. Speaking of parties, YouTube is celebrating its 20th birthday this year, and no one could blame it for feeling jubilant. The platform has overcome rampant underestimation and sporadic demonization to become the second most visited website in the world, behind its parent company, Google. 2.5 billion people watch YouTube videos every month. It has hosted 20 billion videos since launching in 2005, and its content has partially or completely replaced traditional television viewing for many of them. Smart TVs have made the site so easily accessible that television screens have now surpassed phones and laptops as the primary way people watch it in the U.S. Where a previous generation of families might have gathered around the electronic hearth to watch Survivor, they now communally binge Amelia Dimonsberg's swoon-worthy Chicken Shop Date or Michelle Kerr's Daredevil docuseries Challenge Accepted. Kerr takes on intense challenges for her series, anything from training to be a chess grandmaster to earning a black belt in 90 days. When she premiered the latter 77-minute episode at the Montclair Film Festival last fall, multiple families approached her. It wasn't, "Hey, I'm here because my kids like you." It was, "We're here because when an episode of Challenge Accepted drops, we all sit down on Friday night to watch it together." All of which fuels Hollywood's long love-hate relationship with the platform. YouTube wants to be taken seriously in Hollywood, and they are being taken very seriously, says David R. Craig, a former TV executive turned USC professor and co-author of Social Media Entertainment, The New Intersection of Hollywood and Silicon Valley. Not so much as a creator of content, but as a distraction from the content that Hollywood produces. The anxiety has been hanging in the air for years. Back in 2020, Netflix co-founder Reed Hastings asked me rhetorically, "Does creative quality on YouTube just go up and up and up so that eventually it meets viewers' needs? Do we get outcompeted by some combination of user-generated content?" He calls platforms like YouTube and TikTok his streamers' biggest threat/opportunity. Netflix was also a tech company and relative newcomer at this point, one that had only started presenting original series in 2013. Remember House of Cards? Its own entry into what was soon dubbed the streaming wars sent the industry into convulsions. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. That's www.ncreadingservice.org. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.